You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm chatting with Jasmine, also known as Veracity.
Gone from on a whim, just being like, I'm finally going to take the leap. I did an epic land, COVID hit, which threw off everything. And then I'm doing all of these events where companies are actually trusting me.
What's the craziest thing you've ever hosted?
Rio Major. Absolutely. Like,
that's all it is if you go above and beyond, you get places. And a lot of those pro players that don't go above and beyond will be the ones who you'll see regress. And then when they're no longer performing, they haven't got much else to give.
Right, I'm gonna, Gregan, you've opened a can of worms.
Okay,
now.
This is
something I'm mega passionate about. Right.
The uncertainty of when your next event is gonna be. What's that like for you on a daily basis?
It's quite scary, to be honest. Like, it's great for people when they're watching these broadcasts and stuff like that, because they see this like happy-go-lucky face and personality. But between events, you almost feel a little bit lost.
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Jasmine beyond the game. Jasmine, welcome. Welcome to Beyond the Game.
Thank you.
Have you here.
Pleasure to be here.
You're an esports host.
And
you have been for a few years now,
mm-hmm.
but you've only recently gone full time at the beginning of this year, January. So we're going to talk about your journey, how you got to where you are now, and some of the things you've learned along the way, what you did before, everything like that. But firstly, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Kind of excited, a little bit nervous. I feel like you're going to put me on the spot. I'm also having to fight the urge to like look into a camera, because when I'm hosting, I'm so used to looking into the camera. So yeah, I'm just going to look at you the whole time.
Yeah, that's all you got to do. And that's something all of the hosts we've had on here have said, is it feels very unnatural to be a guest on something and not be asking the questions, just talking about yourself rather than the other way around, where you almost mm-hmm. pretend you don't exist. You want everything to come out of them. So guest time for you. So to start off with, when did you first start esport hosting?
Oh, I wish you told me you were going to ask me that. I would have looked at my calendar.
What was the first gig you remember doing then?
So the first ever gig I did hosting wise was an Epic LAN. And I think it was like 2018,
okay.
maybe 2018, I think. And how that came about was I had always wanted to try hosting, never had the confidence to actually do it. But after I was admining like the face at Major and stuff like that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to try this whole hosting thing and see how it goes. So I posted a tweet, and that's how most good stories start, with posting a tweet. And I said, I want to give this whole hosting thing a go. And Epic LAN were like, yeah, we'll give you a shot. So yeah, I hosted my first ever Epic LAN. It was amazing. I was very, very nervous. And then COVID hit, and events kind of just died off. So I went from being super excited about hosting to then being like, okay, well, what now? I have no idea what to do now.
Well, we met you being the host where I was the analyst doing Lenovo Legion.
Yeah.
I think that was last year around April time. Mm-hmm. And we'd never met before that. I'd seen you hosting.
Wait, have we only known each other for a year?
Yeah, it's not been long
what?
At all. Yeah, it feels like a
I
lot longer.
I thought it longer. Was longer.
Yeah, because then off the back of that, we started playing games together, hanging out a lot more. We worked together on a few other things like Games Without Borders, Gamers 8 as well. Haven't had anything since then, but hopefully
soon TM.
Yeah, maybe we'll get
see,
something.
See, I did it again. I looked into the camera.
Yeah, we'll hopefully do something coming up soon. But when we met, I realized I'd seen you hosting before then because you'd done the British Esports Championship.
Yeah.
And so at that time, I saw you as this sort of up and coming host. You know, when we did Lenovo Legion, I could see you had a lot of the skills needed to be a good host. It was just you were learning, right? Experience.
Yeah.
And with time, I could see you developing into a really good host. And within like 6 months, it felt like you were suddenly doing tier one esports. Did it feel as quick to you going from that smaller host doing smaller community tournaments and things like Lenovo Legion and then suddenly tier one?
Honestly, it was a little bit scary. A lot of the time I felt like, is this real life? Was the question I was constantly asking myself. I don't really view events as being like, bigger or smaller than each other though. So for me it was, if I'm hosting an event, no matter what, I'm still gonna put in the time and the, it doesn't matter if it's an A tier event, it doesn't matter what tier it is. But for me it was more so the amount of events I was kind of doing consistently. That was the shocking and surprising thing for me, because it was like, wow, I've gone from on a whim, just being like, I'm finally going to take the leap. I did an epic LAN. COVID hit, which threw off everything. And then I'm doing all of these events where companies are actually trusting me to go fly abroad to do an event or go and actually host for like them, like in another city and things like that. It's, I think that was the bit that really surprised me, was the consistency of it and how, I don't know, I just didn't think it would really happened so quickly. Yeah.
It can be quite scary with esports because of how infrequent events are for a lot of people. As you mentioned, your frequency was so high that you felt confident enough to go full time the beginning of this year. And the end of last year, you kind of nailed it with IEM Rio, which is probably one of the most prestigious events in esports, to be able to do an IEM for Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
How did you feel when you found out about doing that?
Oh my god. Okay, so I was, when I got the message, so it was the IEM Rio Major. My goal was always like, I'm a huge CS fan, that's no secret. I've played CS like for a very, very long time. My goal was always to host a major. Did I think it would happen last year? Absolutely freaking not. There's no, like, I'm not exaggerating when I say, I think it was like a week and a half or 2 weeks before I got that message. I was talking to my parents and kind of explaining to them like, oh yeah, this is kind of what a major event is. The next major event is going to be in Brazil. It would be so cool if I got to do it. And my mom was like, do you think there'll be an opportunity for you to do it? And I was like, honestly, no, I don't think I'm there yet. But maybe next year, I'm hoping I'll be able to do a major. And she was like, well, keep doing what you're doing. Keep working hard. Like, the same way that you've made progress up until now, you'll continue making progress. So believe in yourself and next year you'll get it. I was like, yeah. And then like 2 weeks later, I was hosting, I was doing some Valorant stuff. And while I was on broadcast, I got the message being like, hey, are you free during these dates? And I look at my calendar and the dates were during Halloween. And I was like, yeah, I'm free. Like, I was supposed to like dress up for Halloween and all of that stuff. But I was like, yeah, why, what's up? And I got the message saying for the Rio Major. I freaked out. Like, you got to remember, I'm in the middle of like a broadcast. The games were going on. So I had a little bit of off time, but I've got that message and I've started freaking out. I'm like, hands are shaking, like I'm very, very confused. I'm like, is this actually legit? Is this real? So I was all over the place emotions wise. I started crying and then had to get on camera again. feel like this is a common theme with me and crime before getting on camera. But yeah, and then I waited until the day after before I told my parents. And I said to them, like, can you, like, I need to speak to you both. And my mum was, like, really worried. She's like, Jasmine's never really this serious, so what's going on? And yeah, like, when I told them, I was crying, and then my mum started crying as well. And, like, my parents were just giving me a hug. They were saying how proud of me they were. But I think the moment for me when I was crying and my mum starts crying, because I've got an esports event, it's like, she knew how much that meant to me, and that shows how much it means to them as well. Because every time I do an event, they'll be like, how did it go? Like, how many viewers were there? Like, did people enjoy it? Did it run smoothly? So yeah, for me, it was, that was an incredible moment, because seeing the emotion that my parents have for what I do was just incredible.
Yeah, having a supportive family is quite challenging in esports for a lot of people. They don't find that level of trust and importance of what you're trying to do. But it sounds like your family have been backing you the whole way.
Yeah. It wasn't always like that, though.
Wasn't always like that?
It wasn't always like that, no.
How did it start?
I grew up with two older brothers. So obviously they played video games, and that's how I got into playing video games, naturally. And my older brothers, obviously, the oldest was like, oh yeah, the internet is like a very scary place, like she's a girl playing games, blah blah. And so my mum was always kind of like, be careful, don't want you like talking to strangers and all that. Like, everybody's parents would tell them not to talk to strangers, and now we live in a day and age where people are on Twitch speaking to strangers every day, we're streaming games, playing games with strangers every day. But I'm making it sound like I'm kind of ancient, to be honest, because I know it's not really like, it's not like it's 100 years ago or anything crazy, you know.
I had the same thing growing up. I was being told, you know, be careful who you speak to online.
Yeah.
And early on, people were very careful about showing themselves online. Mm-hmm. So everyone would have profile pictures of their favorite video game character rather than their face. Now people are a lot more open. They've got Instagrams. They've got pictures of themselves on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But when no one else is showing themselves, there's a lot of space for the weirdos to sneak in.
Yeah.
Whereas I think now it's a lot easier to be able to
hold
trust.
People accountable as well. Yeah. So, yeah, 100%. But yeah, my mum went from being like skeptical about me being a girl playing video games in this space that she wasn't all that familiar with and stuff, to now being like, she gets it. And we speak about it every now and then. And I'm like, how glad are you that I didn't listen to you all those times that you were like, don't really want you playing video games? She was like, yeah, to be fair, you were right, and I'm glad you didn't listen to me. So
I guess growing up, were you sort of a closet gamer where you didn't tell other people about it, or were you very openly a nerdy gamer?
I was openly a nerdy gamer, yeah. And then people at school were mean about it as well, dude. Like, there were people telling stuff like, oh, like, you've got friends online. And they would make that a joke, but it's like, now
it's so normal.
It's so normal. But like, back then, people would be like, oh, you have friends online, that means you don't have friends in real life, kind of thing. And it's like, got
I think
them.
I got a bit of the same, being called a loner at school or something like that, because you got friends online. I think because I was also sporty as well as a nerdy gamer, I kind of had all of the aggressive guys at school were my friends too, because they, you know, they liked me in sporty sense.
Yeah.
So I didn't get put in with the nerdy lot who were a little bit pushed away.
Yeah.
But I do get that feeling that when you were a nerd back in, you're a similar age to me, right?
I'm
27.
Oh, I'm 27 too. Yeah.
So we were the same sort of age at school. And I think when we were at school, it was like, if you were nerdy, you got told you were nerdy, and that was a problem. Whereas now I think gaming is so normal, being a nerd is so normal. In fact, people are more proud about it.
Yeah.
I guess people probably still do get bullied for it on the extreme end. I mean, people get bullied for everything now.
Yeah, I mean, kids are mean. Kids are absolutely cruel. But like, for playing video games, I don't think people would really get picked, like, unless you're really bad at video games, which is,
I guess, depends on the kind of game you play as well. I think
yeah
I think the when I was at school, because I played Nintendo games mm-hmm. as a guy who was 14, 15, I liked Pokemon. I liked Animal Crossing. I think I got a little bit of a stick for that rather than Call of Duty or FIFA, you know?
Okay, yeah. I was the FPS gamer and I still got picked on, so yeah. It wouldn't have made a difference. It
doesn't make a difference. People find a way. If you're different, people don't like
yeah.
it. So you were very openly nerdy, and did you end up having sort of nerdy friend groups growing up?
I wouldn't say my friend groups were nerdy at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that I played games with like a lot of the guys that I was hanging out with and stuff as well was great, because it was like, it doesn't matter if some people are like classing you as like, oh, you got no friends, because it's like, okay, cool, but I'm playing video games and I'm having fun, so I don't really know what that matters. I wouldn't say they were a nerdy group.
Mm-hmm. So you then start to grow older playing video games. At what point did you start working in gaming? When did it start to convert from being your hobby to a bit more of a job?
So, funny story. Around that time, and I'm sure you will agree with this as well, there was this common theme of video games are for children. Like, come on, you're like becoming an adult now, like you can't do this forever. So I had told myself that I was gonna stop playing video games when I turned 18, because and that was what everybody was saying was like an adult age. And when I was in college, I made a very big mistake. I studied law, psychology, business, and English lit.
That sounds like my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm a sciencey person, so every one of those subjects is the opposite end of the spectrum of very wordy.
Yeah, exactly.
Very right. Now, essay-based.
Now imagine my face when I've taken all of these subjects, because I think that's like the correct path to kind of go down, and like in terms of, you know, I didn't know what else I wanted to do. I knew that I enjoyed watching anime at the time, and yeah, I was just like, okay, yeah, I want to help people. I could see myself being involved in law somehow, so I was like, screw it, I'll give it a go. And it was no bueno. It was absolutely not good. Like, I had always struggled with focusing on books or studying and stuff like that. And it wasn't until I essentially wasted that year of studying those subjects that I got my ADHD diagnosis. And then it was like, the penny has dropped. Like, for all these years throughout school, when I'm like struggling when it comes to revision, when it comes to reading books, like, I'm so jealous of people that can just sit down and read a book and retain information and enjoy it. Like, but yeah, at that point, the penny dropped. And then as soon as I got my diagnosis, I was like, okay, I know that the subjects I've chosen, even though for people in the outside world, it might be like a safe bet or the correct route to kind of go down, I know that's not me. Mm-hmm. So I ended up resitting that year. I did product design, I did media, I did IT, and I finished English Lit alongside it as well, which I have no idea how I finished it, but I did. But yeah, they were all very like creative, like making stuff. I've always been a huge IT nerd, so mm-hmm. for me it was just perfect. And yeah, after that, it was actually my law teacher. He said to me, because he knew, like, whenever he was teaching and stuff, I was not there. I was, like, zoned out completely. And I remember he stopped the entire class and was like, what is it that you want to do, Jasmine? And I was like,
oh, my.
I got called out in front of everyone. It was so embarrassing. And I was like, I mean, I like playing video games. And he was like, yeah, but what do you want to do with that? I was like, well, I'd like to make games, but let's be real, that's not going to happen. He was like, but why? Why is that not going to happen? I felt like I was being grilled. And I was like, well, because the majority of people that work in the games industry are guys and nobody's going to take me seriously. And he was like, why would nobody take you seriously? You think they're going to care about your gender if you're able to make an amazing game? If you're able to do your job, that's all they're going to care about. And he had still stopped the entire class. I have everybody staring at me, and you know, the like little projectors, screen things. He like went online and started looking for like university courses that do like games design and stuff like that. And he was like, look, look at all of these courses that you could apply to. And so then, yeah, that was like another boost of, okay, yeah, I'm going to do it.
That stuck with you though. That yeah, moment
100%,
there.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
That was probably a pivotal moment for you to realize you could do it. So I think everyone's got those teachers that they look back and remember for whatever reason it is. And I think that story there, I think there should be more people spreading that message. I think it's becoming more normal now.
Yeah.
Women in gaming, whatever reason it is, whether you want to be on the behind the scenes side, in front of camera. I think the fact there are more people in front of camera like yourself, it's normalizing it. So people are seeing people like you and going, oh, there is a woman working in gaming.
Yeah.
So therefore there must be people I can't see who are also working here. So I think it is changing for the better, and you've got the advantage of that amazing teacher who you can now thank for the fact that you had the confidence to go for it. So from there you went off to university to study game design.
I did games design and development as a computer science course. So yeah, I did a bit of everything. I did programming, I did 3D animation, level design, everything, and I loved it. I didn't love the stress that came with it. Because again, my ADHD made it incredibly difficult, especially surrounding deadlines and stuff like that. It was a very, very stressful time and experience. And I had like some bad personal stuff going on at the same time. So it just made it all very, very hectic and difficult. But alongside that, I was also doing esports. So while I was in college, I started volunteering to admin tournaments, because for me it was very much like I was a big esports fan anyway. I watched a lot of CS, a lot of League as well, and it was like, I want to know what makes these events what they are. Like, it's, I know there's people that can just sit there and enjoy watching the show, but I'm more the kind of person that's like, I need to know how and I need to know why. So yeah, I started volunteering at Insomnia as an admin for their tournaments. And yeah, I was doing that alongside university as well, with UK Masters, the good old days of CS, UK CS. But yeah, so I was doing that alongside uni as well, which meant that because I was admining on, like, I would do my like lectures and stuff, try and cram in some uni work, and then I'd be admining. So it just meant that I had kind of had little to no social life during uni as well, sadly. But
well, I mean, it's different now because gaming is a part of university life.
And
I feel like we were a little bit too late to it. I mean, maybe if I was at uni now, I'd be competing in Rocket League for university. Who knows? But when I was there, it was just starting to happen a bit. We did some small Newell Rocket League tournaments. But the fact that you went to Insomnia, I was at Insomnia when I was at university as well. And I was running booths. Yeah. My first one was I-51, and then I did every single one since
those. I
don't
remember which number was my first one, to
but
be honest.
I know a few people who started their esports careers admining or casting or whatever it was in those community tournaments.
Yeah.
So it was a huge opportunity for people to get kickstarted Insomnia. I think there's, I mean, we had Dom Sacco on recently. We spoke a bit about volunteering.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's like a whole debate of its own, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like maybe like the newer generation of people that are like in esports and stuff like that are dead set against it. But I think for us at that time, we had no other option. Like, nobody is going to take a chance on you to do a good job without you volunteering. Like, the exact same happened with me hosting as well. Like, Epic Land gave me my first shot at, you know, hosting for them, and it was voluntary. And without me doing that, like, nobody else would have really given me the chance to kind of do events for them properly. So
yeah, I mean, it's hard because esports does make a lot of money now, so there's a lot of companies making money. If they were to get volunteers working for them, that's where it starts to become a gray area. And the whole thing is a scale of how much money does a business need to make before volunteers are unethical, how much work they expect to do before the volunteering there is unethical. And so it's a gray area because everyone's line is at a different point.
Yeah.
And it's very easy for people who aren't involved in the process to say, that's not fair. You should be paying those people.
Yeah.
And I actually spoke to a few people who got annoyed at the volunteering thing for insomnia, to which I asked them, what do the volunteers do at the event and how much are they getting in terms of perks? Like, what do they get in return for this? None of them could say, because they didn't know what they were annoyed about. And I think that's the problem, is people look at these volunteer spots and there is unethical volunteering, people being forced to work for free for 2 months at a company where they're doing monotonous tasks at the hope of getting a job afterwards. And then there is no guarantee. Yeah. In those situations, of course, it's unfair. But to look at something and not even understand the full extent of what that person is doing, that's where it starts to get complicated. And like with hosting at an event where the event is not making enough money to pay you, they need someone to host. And to be honest, if they wanted to get a big host in, they should pay them. But if they're getting people like yourself who hadn't done it before, it makes complete sense that you'd get 100%. That opportunity.
100%. I think a lot of people also just get... A lot of people think that esports is like very, very like profitable. There's people out there that think that esports orgs are profiting and it's like they're making a load of money. And it's like, guys, I don't know how to break this to you, but it's really... orgs a lot of the time are not making money.
Like most organizations aren't making money. I mean, we've seen it with a lot of the big tournament organizers, DreamHack, Face It, ESL, requiring Saudi money to pay for a lot of the stuff they're doing. And then if the game maker, who ultimately the people who make the games make the most money, the game developers have to pay for everything. And for them, esports is just a marketing tool. People look at esports as this thing that's sustainable, but realistically, it's just a big marketing tool for games to survive.
Yeah.
And so we're all being paid through a game being successful, and then the esports success makes them more money. And so if the esports isn't doing well, as we, our last guest is from FIFA, and they were saying how FIFA esports was meant to be there to make them more money. And when they stopped doing it and they still made money, they were like, why are we paying for FIFA esports, you know? So yeah, everyone who looks at esports as this big opportunity to make money, it's really not as...
I get it though. Like, it's easy for like the fans at home and stuff. They're watching a broadcast. They see all the sponsor roles and all the VTs and stuff like that. And they're like, man, esports is making so much bank right now. And they see like the prize money that the players win and stuff like that. And like, man, the org is making so much. But it's like, okay, now think about how many people that org is employing. Now think about the players' salaries. Now think about facilities and bills. And I feel like people don't really grasp that, you know, just because a jersey costs £60 or however much they cost nowadays, I don't know, does not mean that every single one of these orgs is making money.
It's also, you see a sponsor and like some sponsors don't even pay in terms of money.
They pay with product.
Yeah, especially like chair brands. A lot of the time chair brands don't have the money to be able to sponsor. Yeah. So they just say, we'll fit out your whole HQ with chairs.
Yeah.
And that'll be their sponsorship. So people are so unaware of what seeing a logo on a jersey or on a broadcast actually converts in terms of money. It might just about pay for a few of the people working at the event. Anyway, that's a whole deep topic. We want to talk about you, Jasmine. So we're talking about the different roles you've done and the big events you've done. What's the craziest thing you've ever hosted? Like, in terms of like, when you look back and you go, how has my life come to this where I was hosting this?
Rio Major. Absolutely. Like, man, there were so many moments where I was just crying, and I feel like such a baby just saying it, honestly, but like, I feel like unless you're one of my friends, you probably don't realize just how much that moment meant to me, because like that was what I was grinding for, and it was like, oh my god, like I've done it. And even after, I think it was maybe like a month after the major, I was back in the UK and stuff. I was on the train and I just got super emotional. I was crying and it was like, oh my God, like I actually did the major.
And I mean, when you described your journey as well, you were a CSGO viewer and then you became an admin and then you did small LAN. So you've gone through the whole journey.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say the last leg of it was way quicker than you ever expected.
Yeah.
So I guess it sort of caught up to you quite quickly. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I was surprised when you spoke about Crazy Mind. That makes sense for you. I think someone looking at what you've done, they'll be like, what about Neymar? Like, that's just something that just happened in your
God,
life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was quite wild as well. So meeting Neymar, that was...
You were doing like a Neymar show, was it?
Yeah, it was like a PUBG event. Neymar and his friends just played some PUBG. And he was so lovely, by the way. So nice, so welcoming. Like, you kind of assume that all of these big stars are going to have like a really big ego, but... very, very down to earth, very nice person.
I feel like with big personalities, there's like a flipping point for a lot of them where when they've made it so far, they then just become really nice because they're comfortable.
Yeah.
Whereas I think when people are on that grind and they're big, that's when they're struggling, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Like when you're in that early grind as a celebrity, just everyone's asking for everything constantly and like you feel like you're just being used. And I think there's certain people when they get to a sweet spot, mm-hmm. they can just do whatever they want. And I think that's when they relax a little bit. I think the same thing's true within YouTube space. Mm. I remember some of the early events I went to, YouTubers were very unpleasant because you'd speak to them and it would be like, oh, how many subs you got? And you're like, okay.
I've heard that that like Twitch partners are like that at events.
It is always
true?
The ones on their come up, the grinders, the ones who are in the early stage. Why is when you though? Like Johnny Boy used to be the same and I'm sure he won't mind us saying this, he's so good about it all now,
so
and he's
so lovely.
And he
actually
was,
no yeah I think I remember him saying
yeah
when we were at Gamers 8 I think I remember him mentioning it.
Yeah, he was just lost in the sauce. He was like every day was seeing the numbers going up, he was opening YouTube Studio on his phone constantly. And like seeing how his latest video, he'd tell us, he'd just put a video out and it's, you know, it's a 1 out of 10 or whatever. You know, he was so obsessed with it because you have to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you see people when they're unpleasant is when they're in that obsessed grind set. And then once they get past that, as Neymar probably has been for a while now, and he's just literally putting on a gaming event with his mates and he's probably just feeling so relaxed and happy that he's in a position where he could do that.
Yeah, it was so good. Honestly, I feel like this whole like... ego thing, esports is so bad for it, man. Like so as well as doing like admining and hosting and all of that as well, I also did social media management for a bunch of pro players, and a lot of the time it just made me realize how little time they actually have to engage with audience members and like fans that are cheering you on. But also even when I was admining, like I would be asking players after their games, it's like, okay, they want you for a quick interview, and they'd be like, oh man, again, like, and this is coming from a team that's just won, so you're kind of like, listen, if you can't give like a 5-minute interview after you've just won your game, the fans are watching, the sponsors want it, like the only reason you're here right now is because you have the backing of all of the fans, right? If there were zero fans in esports and nobody cheering your team on, esports wouldn't be a thing. You wouldn't be in this huge like arena. You wouldn't be on this stage. You wouldn't be getting paid as much as you are right now. So like, show some respect and give the damn 5-minute interview. It's really not a big ask. I get it when people are like, you know, it's been a really long day for the players. Like, I appreciate it. But just say that on camera. Just say like, look, man, it's been a really long day for us. So I don't want to like stay here too long. Say it, because people want to know the truth. They want to know how you're thinking, what you're feeling. You don't always have to be happy-go-lucky as a player. You know, it's that emotion is what people want to see.
Yeah. But to be fair, I think there's a lot of population of the fans that put off pro players from doing that kind of stuff. We've seen recently, so Tens... with the Valorant, and he's really struggling with a lot of stuff right now. You know, he was the best player in the game and people still think he is. Mm-hmm. So when he's not playing as well, he gets a lot of hate for that. And then with Kaede going through cancer treatment, you know, he's not in the best place. And if he has a bad game and just gets abused for it, like, he's not going to want to go and talk to the fans through an interview. So I completely get it from both sides, but you're right. I think it's just going above and beyond is how you got to where you are, right? Like, that's all it is if you go above and beyond, you get places. And a lot of those pro players that don't go above and beyond will be the ones who you'll see regress, and then when they're no longer performing, they haven't got much else to give.
Right, I'm gonna, Gregan, you've opened a can of worms. Okay, now this is something I'm mega passionate about. Right, I'm sick and tired of all of these pro players being like, social media doesn't matter, like, I'm not interested in social media. All right, yeah, cool, that's great, bro. You've got a team right now, a team that is sponsored. Fabulous, I'm so happy for you. But what are you going to do when you get dropped? What are you going to do when you don't have sponsors of your own, you don't have branding of your own? You are just like a player, you are just a name. Unless another org comes along and picks you up, how are you going to get your next paycheck? How are you going to guarantee the longevity of your career? You can't. Like, start working on your personal brand is like the point I would continue driving home to all of these players. But it's not until they lose the org, until they lose the sponsorship, that they're like, oh yeah, maybe I should be focusing on growing my YouTube or my Instagram or my Twitter. But then it's like, okay, yeah, but by that point, it's going to be 10 million times harder for you to grow that, because when you had the backing of an org, when you had the content to film with a team, when you were traveling to all of these cool countries, for you to grow those social platforms would have been so much easier than now, when you are orgless, you have no teammates, your LFT, your rep potentially is not the greatest in the esports community. Like, what's your game plan now?
I think the big thing people don't realize with that is that you can pay people to do that. Like, yeah, a lot of these pros are in such amazing positions where they've got so much money, their life is pretty much paid for if they're in a training facility, yeah, and all that kind of thing. They're literally just money coming in that they can invest into stuff. And a lot of them will invest in their future, you know, they'll buy properties or whatever, yeah, or they'll invest in, I don't know what they invest in. Maybe they'll have a financial advisor, they'll invest in stocks or whatever. Some of them will be in crypto. Mm-hmm. They can invest in their own brand, pay someone to run, yeah, their socials like you did, and then grow that. I know Zywoo?
Yeah.
He joined Vitality. The first thing he said was like, I don't want to do social media, I just want to play. So Vitality were like, we'll support you with that. And that's where good orgs come in.
Yeah.
And Zywoo's one of the biggest names in esports now. And like, I don't know if he does now, but for the longest time, he just didn't do his socials because he didn't want to. And that's fine. Were you doing them?
Yeah, I worked for the company that was doing his socials, yeah.
Literally, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Like, there's people out there, like, they don't want to do social, yeah, media. And so just delegate to someone else, pay someone else.
I think that was the...
I didn't realize that.
You're, yeah, yeah.
You're doing exactly.
But that's the thing, though. You don't want people to know it's you,
true,
right?
Like, exactly.
And I think there's this, like, this is why I would always say to my players, I'd be like, look, I will post for you before your matches and everything. That's great. But how you're feeling after your matches, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I'm not going to try and make out like, oh, disappointing loss, we'll get them next time. Like, I want you to feel comfortable enough to tell people how you're feeling. Because once you take that first step, I think posting about after a game is the most difficult bit, right? If you're able to be that transparent in the first place, it will get easier the more you go along. It's just like trying to alleviate some of the weight and pressure off of their shoulders so they can focus on playing the game. And yeah, I think just working on their personal brand is an absolute must. Like, for fans, it means so much. For the players, it will almost become second nature as well.
It was interesting because you were working on other people's brands so much.
Yeah.
When you were first on your come up with hosting, you didn't spend much time on your own brand because you were sick of social media by the time you got to it.
Yeah.
Have you found it easier now you're going full time to focus on doing your own bits?
How did you know I was so like, did I post it somewhere?
You told me.
I was going to say, oh my God, this guy's a mind reader. No. Yeah, honestly, by the time like I'm working on, we had like over 100 players across different game titles and stuff. And you focus so much on other people's social media. By the time it got to my own, I was so fed up, so sick and tired. I'm like, I don't even know how to be creative anymore because I've like exerted all of my creativity for these other people. I will say I still find it a little bit difficult, especially with my Instagram. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to get better though. I really have. And I feel like a huge part of that is like, what I really want to do is do behind the scenes content. The problem is though, I'm so in the zone when I'm working, I'll forget to record or like yeah, I'll just forget to record, or I'm like too busy to be able to record, and I'm like, is anybody really gonna watch it? And then I start to doubt myself, and I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever, I'm just gonna get on and do my job. It is still difficult, yes, because I feel like
you're just giving that big old rant to all the players out there.
I have.
And then, yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, it's so tough when you're focused on your job.
If I can do it for them, they can do it for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to do it for me as well now.
I mean, you've got the advantage, you've got a lot of professional pictures come through. So yes, you can just spam those.
Honestly,
everywhere.
The biggest shout out ever has to go to all of the amazing photographers we have in esports, because without them, my Instagram would be dead.
Yeah.
No, but also, like, they put in so much hard work, like, behind the scenes, during media days. They have, oh my God, they have long, long hours as well. So
they do. I just saw Joe Brady, hopefully you're going to get him on at some point at a Pokemon event. And I was speaking to him, he's like, there's such long days, because by the time you're finished, you're going to have to edit.
Yeah.
And, like, the photographers the are there the whole time. And then plus time doing all of the editing, and then they got to send it, upload it, and I have so much respect for them. But anyway, let's do what we ask every guest on here, which is top five games of all time. So I'm interested to know what your top five games, and if you've got them in a title like Call of Duty, you mentioned, you have to choose one of them. You can't just say all Call of Duties. And it can be based off of the games you enjoy, can be based off of the games you've made the most career progression through. Yeah, top five games of all time.
Ooh, okay.
It's a tough
of
one.
Of all time.
For you, yeah. Everyone gives a different one. You know, it's tough. I should have pre-warned you about this.
You really should have. Okay, wait.
I think the best thing to do is just get going. It's not that deep.
Okay,
no right or wrong answer, it's not that deep. If you get it wrong, then no one's going to hold you accountable except
apart
for yourself. and me, maybe. Yeah, I'll bring it up. I can't believe you said that.
Okay, no. So CSGO.
I was going to say, it has to be in
no
there.
No surprise. Kingdom Hearts 2.
Okay, Kingdom Hearts 2. What was it about that game?
Just Kingdom Hearts in general. I love the whole... I haven't played Kingdom Hearts 3, though. I've only just found my PlayStation again with moving and everything. But Kingdom Hearts 2, the storyline is beautiful. The step up from Kingdom Hearts 2 from Kingdom Hearts 1 was incredible. Characters look amazing. Animation looks phenomenal. Just everything about it, man.
It's a JRPG, right? Kingdom Hearts? I don't know that well.
I don't know if I'd class it as an RPG.
Okay.
So it's the one with all like the Disney characters. So you've got Mickey Mouse, you've got Donald, Goofy.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm getting it mixed up with a different game. Yeah.
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 Would recommend you play it. Honestly, it's so good. Incredible.
Well, fair play. What about number three then?
I feel like this is where it gets a bit more difficult.
There's got to be a Call of Duty in there, surely. The amount you've spoken about it.
No. I don't think I'd put COD in there.
Okay.
I really don't think I would. Okay, this might be a bit of a surprising one. And I'm not the best at it, and I don't have a whole lot of hours in it.
Okay.
Rocket League. Allow me to explain. Because of the Rocket League community.
Okay.
Honestly,
I thought you were going to say that.
That was the one thing that I said to you guys when we were at Gamers 8, was the community... like makes it what it is. And like, even to this day, when people are like, oh, what's like the best game you've worked on and stuff like that, I'm like, it's so difficult to say, because CSGO I'm so incredibly passionate about. Like, I grew up playing 1.6 Source. I played CS for the majority of my life, so I'll always have that love for CS. It's just like a different level of like appreciation when you see you have like a community of people that are passionate about this game, and they're trusting you to do a good job, and then they're telling you how proud of you they are for it. And these people don't even know you. It's like a next level feel good feeling.
I did push to try and get you for more Rocket League stuff. I think it's just really tough because the Rocket League community has got such a set talent roster.
Yeah,
that getting new people in is really tough.
They all do such a good job of it as well, and I think it translates on camera as well. You can see when people are comfortable with one another. You can see when they've got that chemistry, the banter and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think the Rocket League community have pretty much nailed it.
I think they appreciated the fact that you knew what you're talking about a game you just come in to do. Because I think a lot of the time when you have a new host and they come onto a game and they don't know the game that well, it can be quite hard for them to speak about it. Mm-hmm. And I think you and Barney as well did a very good job of it. We're at Gamers 8 because you both just asked us so much stuff.
Yeah.
Like you were constantly like, tell me more. I need to know this. You'd hang out with the players in the evening and sort of take those anecdotes with you onto camera. I think that's something that a lot of people don't see when they see good hosts work. I think Ian Chambers is the same. Mm-hmm. I've heard great things about him at events where he just does so much work off camera to make the event as good as possible. So it's no wonder the Rocket League community could see that. So it's made it into your top five games.
It has, honestly. The players, they have great banter as well. Like, I was worried, truthfully, that I would go into Rocket League and there'd be this, like, ego, I guess, just because you get it from a lot of games where people are like, you don't know what you're talking about. And then you combine the fact that I'm a woman, so naturally they're going to be like, oh, why have they brought her on? She doesn't know what she's talking about, that kind of thing. I thought it'd be like that kind of vibe, but hands up, I was completely wrong. The players were so lovely. They all suck at playing Uno. Rettles especially. That guy is on something, thinking he's good. But yeah, like everybody was super welcoming and I absolutely loved that, yeah.
So we've got two more games in that top five. Rocket League, I haven't had many guests say Rocket League. Obviously Stumpy said it. But yeah, I'm glad to hear Rocket League getting
I've said it for like a completely different reason though. And I don't know if that's cheating because it's like,
that's fine.
I'm not putting it in my top five because it's like Kingdom Hearts where I'm like, oh, the storyline, the characters, the animation, but it does easily make it.
I think it's when you look at it, you just got to look at the games that have had the biggest influence on your life. So if it's for the gaming experience itself, fair enough. If it's for the people within it, that's also fair. So these last two, I'm pushing you for an answer here.
Worms Armageddon.
Okay, that was a very different game.
Yeah, Worms Armageddon. It's so fun, man. Okay,
I've played one Worms game, I think.
It better have been Armageddon.
I don't know which one it was, but I
were they 3D characters looking all nicely polished and...
I'm guessing that's Worms Armageddon then.
No, it's not. Worms Armageddon is the really bad 2D one.
Oh, okay. Because it's like a tactical game, right? Just with a really weird lore around Worms characters.
Yeah, just Worms fighting each other, man.
Worms fight each other.
Shooting bazookas and stuff.
So the thing is, Worms Armageddon, I think everyone can picture them, but a lot of people have played the games. Because I feel like it's one of those where you've seen the game, you've seen the characters.
Just worms in it. So I used to play that with my two older brothers when I was younger. So obviously that was special to me because it was like, oh, spending quality time with like your siblings. And then they had it on Steam and then I spent that time with people on Discord playing Worms Armageddon. And it was just like this nice kind of feeling of, okay, yeah, I played this game when I was a kid and I'm playing it again now on stream with people. And yeah,
okay, so number five then, we've got CSGO, got Kingdom Hearts 2, Rocket League, Worms Armageddon,
Valorant.
I wondered if this would come up because we played Valorant together a lot. It was around the time when we first did our Rocket League event together. I play a lot of Valorant, you play a lot of Valorant. I guess I just assumed it was another one of the many games in your community that you'd played. But is that the one which you feel like you enjoyed the most, or is it the gameplay itself? Why have you chosen Valorant?
I think Valorant came about at a very good time. I think CS was becoming stale for a lot of people, especially pro players, obviously. It came about at a good time. It was kind of new, fresh. You've got all of these different agents, all these different abilities and stuff. And it was pushing CS players a little bit out of their comfort zone, but not too much. So, you know, you can't have the whole Molly, Flash, Smoke all in one anymore. You got to rely on people a lot more. I think it's a combination of reasons. I think the timing at which it came out was great for a lot of CS players that weren't necessarily getting the most out of their esports career in CS. They moved over to Valorant and found a lot more success. Mm-hmm. I think for the community of players as well, that were getting, you know, bored of playing CS day in, day out. It was new. It was fresh. Obviously, we played games together. It was fun.
It's introduced a lot of new people to shoot as well. It was my first proper shooter, I'd say. And I love it now. I play it far too much. In fact, I probably play it more than Rocket League now.
Really?
Yeah. I'm grinding. I don't know if you've seen
what
my rank.
No, what rank?
Ascendant 1, Ascendant 2.
Okay, you're
on the grind. I'm on the grind. Okay. But yeah, it's also quite nice because you can play it with a mixed group where someone's very good at the game, someone's not so good at the game, and you can play together because of the util usage.
Yeah.
I found that I've been able to play with a whole range of ability friends and still get a lot out of it. Especially like I started off as a Sova main purely because I couldn't shoot. I was like, if I can use a character that helps out my teammates who can shoot better than me.
Yeah.
So it was quite good for that, as it introduced people to shooting games where you didn't have to be so good at the shooting aspect.
I will say, though, I feel like it's very overwhelming for new players to try and pick up and play. Like, CS, I feel there's a lot less to try and remember. You know what I mean? But Valorant, if you're a new player, you got to think about your abilities, your opponent's abilities. If something comes flying at you, you have no idea what that's going to end up doing to your character. Yeah. Are you going to be stunned? Are you going to be flashed? Is it going to do damage? So yeah, I think both games, incredible. Yeah, I think Valorant is probably my fear.
Yeah, I think it's quite a nice looking game as well.
I'm going to be thinking about this on the way home now as well.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to think of some other games. You're going to be messaging me like, can I take that one back? Can we re-record this bit? But no, that's a good top five. There's some very good games in there.
I think there's a range of reasons for each of them as well.
Yeah, I think it's very tough when someone says to you a top of anything, a top list of anything. Very hard to categorize the why. So with this one, I've had people use games that they've enjoyed the experience of. People talk about the ones that have been important for their career. And I think having a mixture of that is quite good.
Yeah.
So you've got a whole range of reasons there, which is lovely. We also ask everyone what their greatest gaming achievement is. Now, again, this can be career-wise. You probably say, I am Rio. So I'm going to take that career-wise side away from you.
Ooh,
and I want you to tell me what your greatest gaming achievement in a game is.
When you say in a game.
Yeah, so like 100% in a game, a rank you've reached, a particular moment, a tournament you won, something like that.
Wow. I really wish you told me these sooner.
I should have. It's my bad. I normally tell everyone about these because this is like the only regular question we have for everyone. There's one more, which is right at the end, but you'll be fine with that, I'm sure.
Okay.
Don't stress about that yet.
I'm stressing about it already. Gaming achievement. Oof. In game.
I mean, it could be anything. I mean, Ian Chambers came on here and said the fact that he always wins Warriors Stadium in America against his family. Like, it can be the most simple of things. It could be a particular way you play a game. I don't know. Just anything. It's a tough one.
You're making me feel like I've got no gaming achievements now, because I'm like, you're probably thinking I have so many to choose from, but I'm feeling like I have nothing to choose from. I don't know.
What about that time where you came second to me in that tournament at Meltdown?
Oh, shut up. We don't talk about that.
You were so sure you were going to win that, and then
I was so salty.
Yeah.
Oh, and then that shot that we drank was absolutely disgusting. I thought I was going to throw up.
Yeah.
I think it was like a banoffee pie shot. Or
something. Well, so for context, we had a get together at a store, which is a 3v3 Valorant tournament.
Yeah.
You and two of our friends, Flame and John, were both 100% the best players in the room in theory. Right?
In theory.
Should have been the best three. I turned up, I wasn't going to play, and two guys were looking for a third. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll play with them. And because the setups were so poor.
They were so scuffed.
It was like laggy, 60 frames per second. It didn't matter how good you were because you had to get used to the setup.
I'm pretty sure they were 60 hertz as well.
Yeah, it was not an easy way to play. And 3v3, super scuffed game mode. It was like Swift Play 3v3 Valorant. And so we played in this final. We managed to beat you. And the prize money was like a bar tab.
How much was the bar? I think it was like 20 quid.
It was one of those where it was like, it did not mean much to us in general. The prize wasn't, it was the prize.
It was the principle.
The fact
of
that I
winning.
Turned up, wasn't going to play, just picked up two random people in the bar and we won the final against you, and yeah, you were salty. And so we did the shots, and then they had this list of shots that were like fancy shots. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a shot of one liquid, it was a mixture of stuff with a fancy name, like there was like a Kirby or something, wasn't there?
Oh yeah, they were game themed.
And so we didn't really know what they were going to taste like.
They did not taste good.
It was a mixed bag. So that's not your greatest gaming achievement.
That I would not count that as an achievement. Uh-huh. Maybe for you that's an achievement.
Honestly, I think we should just let you have I Am Rio.
Yeah, I Am Rio, I'll take it.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
I feel so bad for putting that on you and being like, you cannot say any of your actual greatest achievements.
If I couldn't pick Rio, it would still be like a career achievement. Doing Twitch Rivals, man, that was fun.
Twitch Rivals are always fun.
Yeah, that was so much fun. Like,
did you compete in it or?
No, I was actually casting.
Casting it.
Casting.
What game?
Minecraft.
They're always a lot of fun.
Minecraft ones are so much fun, dude. Mm. Yeah. So creative every single time.
I love competing in those. I've done a few Rocket League ones. They're a lot of fun. Yeah.
I won the first one
I did, and then the other two. So the first one was very standard Rocket League. Mm-hmm. The other two, they introduced a lot of the weird game modes. And I won't lie.
You're gonna blame the game modes, aren't you?
it was very frustrating playing these other game modes, and I think one of them I had apparently Jack and Geordie's mm-hmm. early on when they were dating. Like when it wasn't very public, and Jack had just flown back from somewhere, had barely slept, and he'd just come back from holiday. Mm-hmm. And like they were just chatting away and just like not really caring about the game. And I was there like third wheeling, like, oh, I just want this to be done.
No.
And Jack was like delusional because he was so tired from he just flown back from, I think that was when they were on holiday in Asia somewhere. Mm-hmm. They just flown back. I was like, okay, this is chalked. We're not winning this. So yeah,
it's all right. At least you won one of them.
Yeah, you got to be selective with who you pick on your team.
Yeah. If you ever need a plus one.
Yes, I'll think about it. Normally I like to win. But
what do you mean? I bring the good vibes. Did you not hear everything I just said?
Yeah, I'm sure you bring good vibes, but I can have someone who brings good vibes and can hit the ball.
Not quite like me.
No. Okay. Well, maybe you can just join us in the call and just cheer us on.
Yeah, go on. I will.
Okay. I'll bear that in mind for
hype
next one.
Hype coach.
Yeah, hype coach. Always need a hype coach in your team.
Exactly.
So we'll move on from your greatest game achievement. So IEM Rio keeps coming back up. Wonder why. Feel like it was quite a big monumental moment
really
in your career.
It really was, yeah.
I guess the question is, there's a lot of challenges associated with your job.
Oof, here we go.
Now, esports hosting is obviously an amazing job, an amazing privilege to do. I think that's the case for any pro player, coach, talent, anyone who works in esports. We're all very privileged to do what we do. Mm-hmm. But there are challenges associated with it. I guess, where do you want to start with the difficulties of...
Should I pull out my long list?
Yeah, you pull out your long list. I guess the most obvious one to me is the fact that you do a lot of different games mm-hmm. and the fact that you do a lot of big events where there is a lot of other people who might be working them.
Yeah.
The uncertainty of when your next event is going to be. What's that like for you on a daily basis?
It's quite scary, to be honest. Like, it's great for people when they're watching these broadcasts and stuff like that, because they see this like happy-go-lucky face and personality. But between events, you almost feel a little bit lost. It's like, wow, I'm going to sound so doom and gloom, but it's literally like you feel like you have no purpose to life. And I don't know if that's just me, but my life kind of revolves around, I constantly feel like I need to be doing something. If I'm not, then I'm just like, I'm wasting my time. What am I doing? Like, all my friends, they work 9 to 5s. So, you know, you got until like 5 or 6 p.m. to kind of figure out what you want to do with your whole day. And I think that's why I'm like trying to focus a lot more on streaming now, meeting new people, playing games with them. But yeah, I think the uncertainty, it is very anxiety inducing. I think especially the fact that TOs a lot of the time, believe it or not, I don't know, for some reason, people that watch these broadcasts assume that we all know which event we're doing like 6 months ahead of time. Let me tell you now, that is absolutely not the case. Like, you'll get messaged 2 weeks before an event and you just got to drop everything and say, yeah, because if you don't, then you're worried about, okay, they might not ask me to come back again because I've said no the previous time. So yeah, there's so much that kind of goes on behind the scenes that people think they know, but they don't actually know.
Especially as a host, because a lot of hosts will get interchangeably moved around depending on the game. You know, if you're an analyst for a league and you get the season, you kind of know in advance a little bit more.
Yeah.
But for one-off events, especially in Counter-Strike, all the different organizers have different preferences. Mm-hmm. So you might get to host one event but not the other. And maybe a host pulls out for whatever reason, they're unwell, or, you know, maybe they can't do that event because they're double booked. Then that's where you start getting those opportunities. And like you said, if you don't take them, they might choose someone else next time. So you constantly feel like you're on hold. I guess that I've been through this for a few years now, so I've experienced this. I don't know when the next event's going to be. Mm-hmm. Have you booked anything in advance? Have you ever done that since you've been full-time esports host? Because I'm scared to book something in 3-4 weeks time because I just don't know whether that's going to be possible.
So I was away in Greece.
On holiday
to celebrate my birthday, not last year, the year before. And I was like, you know what, this like holiday, I'm going to use it to actually disconnect, because at the time I was still working 9 to 5, so it was like very stressful time. So I was like, I'm not going to go on my phone, I'm not going to check any emails, I'm not going to follow up any work stuff. And just on the off chance, one day at dinner, I was like, oh, I'm just going to check my emails. The day before, I had got an email from ATO asking me to do a very, very big tournament. I frantically replied and was like, yes, I'll do it. But by that point, it was too late. That was literally one day late.
It's crazy.
So ever since that, but like at that point, I didn't even get a reply. Like I said, yes, I'll do it. And I followed up with like another 4 or 5 emails. And I didn't get a reply. So I'm constantly trying to bump them up. I'm like, hey, like, do you still need me for this? Because the way that it worked was I would have had to either fly directly from Greece to this event, in which case I kind of need to know so that I can figure out flights and stuff like that.
Mm.
Or I would have had to go home for a few hours or like have someone meet me at the airport, give me a suitcase so I can go off again.
Yeah.
Ever since then, I have not been able to disconnect myself entirely from work, or, you know, booking stuff ahead of time is a no-go.
It's quite scary because you always want to be available just in case. I've had some crazy opportunities just come about from a Twitter DM. Mm-hmm. You respond that day and then you get the opportunity. Who knows what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I've been too late, like you described, and because of that I've now gotten the habit of instantly responding. And I had one recently where someone messaged me about 1 a.m. I was up playing Valorant at 1 a.m. So I responded, yeah, I can chat to you after I finish Valorant here. So I had a meeting at 2 a.m. with them because they're American. And after that meeting, I was like, I should not have done that meeting. I should have waited till tomorrow because I was so tired that in the meeting, I was explaining quite complex stuff to them about my coaching style.
Yeah.
And then was like, I came across so badly there because I was so tired.
Mm.
But because of the habit you get in with esports, you feel like you need to be there instantly. Yeah. Otherwise, tomorrow it might be gone. So it can get quite unhealthy in that sense. But what's the shortest turnaround from getting a message to travel to an event and you working the event? You don't have to name the event necessarily, but like,
Maybe a week.
A week, that's not too bad.
Maybe even less, actually.
I was going to say, because I've heard some can you fly out tomorrow moments from people.
I don't think I've had a day. Maybe three or four days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's rough, though, especially when like people are asking if you want to hang out or if you're free, you know, oh, let's grab dinner next month. And it's like, yeah, sure, if my calendar permits it. Mm-hmm. I don't see why not, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. You want to commit to stuff, but so for example, with my family, they now know that anytime I commit to anything, it's a soft commit. It's like, yes, I'll come, but if something comes up, I'm probably going to cancel on you and we'll reschedule it. And I feel guilty, but I think if you have the right people around you who understand that, you know, especially like when people get relationships or family or whatever it is, they all need to understand that that's your lifestyle now. Yeah. I guess the other side of it is, you know, traveling around the world is, I got a lot of stick for this once because I complained about traveling.
Gregan, how dare you?
Okay, so I don't, because you do stay in the place you've been to. Like with Rio, you stayed there afterwards and made it a little holiday.
Yeah.
So maybe you're just better at traveling than I am. But I used to complain about traveling because you get in a flight, you fly to a place, you see the hotel, you see the convention center, and then you fly home.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, and that's where, especially when there's a lot of events on, you don't have the time to be able to stick around. And traveling is exhausting. Going to different time zones can be exhausting. What's your experience like with traveling around the world?
I freaking love it.
Honestly, so you do it properly. This is where I need to learn from
you. I love it, but I do agree. A lot of the time, it's not feasible to stay for longer. So my general rule of thumb is if it's a country where it's really, really far away. So for example, Brazil was like a long journey. It was like, realistically, am I going to have the time in my life to spontaneously be like, you know what? I'm going to take 2 weeks off to go and visit Brazil. Am I going to be able to do that in the future? Maybe not, because of how, you know, time difference, how far away it is and stuff like that. So I was like, it's worth staying a bit longer. Australia is another country that I did that with as well. Australia was a long travel day. So yeah, I think if it's a country where it's like feasibly, you're probably not going to be able to go back there for a while, it's worth staying a bit longer. But yeah, I don't know. Personal preference.
Yeah, I think the side of travel that is the tough bit is the bits that aren't actually fun, is that sitting in a plane. And this is something I think a lot of people don't appreciate. And this, again, we're very privileged. I love the fact that we get to travel around the world to do things. But traveling in a plane, when you're traveling for fun and for leisure, you associate it with the joy of, oh, I'm about to go on holiday. It's exciting. Yeah. And then when you travel back, it's, oh, I'm getting back home, getting back to normal life. It's exciting, right? But then when you're traveling for the sake of work, it's like, okay, I just need to get there. Right, you have a whole day where you just have to just get there. And then once you're there, you settle down, you get relaxed, you get into your hotel or whatever. So yeah, travel days are a part of it. But then there's also, you know, when you're traveling around the world, you get to meet lots of amazing different people. As we mentioned before, you've met some crazy people through your experiences. When you travel to a new event, do you tend to have, like with the different games you work on, do you tend to have like people who you're excited to see, right? Is there anyone, like when you go to an event you haven't seen in ages? Because I guess you're starting to work with the regular people a bit more.
It's kind of like different people every time, to be honest. Banks, I would say, James Banks, he's always a lovely person.
I've heard great things about him.
So lovely, so down to earth. Always a good time seeing him. Have a little catch up with him as well. But yeah, I think the people kind of change event to event. I'm finding myself kind of pushing myself out of my comfort zone a little bit more in terms of like speaking to the players and stuff. Like, yeah, you can speak to them on social media, but then when they're at an event, you kind of want to leave them to it. You know, you don't want to bother them. You want to let them focus on their game and stuff. But I'm kind of feeling a little bit more comfortable now to just hang out with them. Like you mentioned, I did it with the Rocket League guys, but like with the CS guys, it's nice to be able to have that banter with them if I'm interviewing them and stuff. Like spending that time with them off camera makes them feel comfortable enough to speak to you on camera, and I think that is something that people don't really get, but for me as a host, it just makes sense.
Yeah, I guess the last sort of part I wanted to talk about before we close up the podcast, it is quite a serious topic. And the reason why I asked you beforehand if you're comfortable talking about it is because it's quite a challenging thing to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's that you've had to deal with some challenging members within community. So you have your own community that you have in Discord, you play games with them. And sometimes community members can get a bit overly attached and can, I guess, it can get quite challenging for you to manage those people. So you've had a tough experience within your community. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because I know so many other people who've had to deal with this. And I hope that through people talking about it, people become aware of it and understand what it's like for people like you. So you want to talk a bit about your challenging experience within your community?
Yeah. So the TLDR, I play games with people on Discord, on stream, and I'm the kind of person that's like, I want to play games with everyone and anyone. I don't care how many hours you have in the game. I don't care if you're a streamer. I don't care how many followers you have or any of that. Like, if you bring good vibes and we have fun playing games together, that's all I really care about. So this person, like everybody else in the Discord, would hang around, play games with us and stuff. However long later, tells me that he is in love with me. And I feel like, honestly, I could not have replied any better, even if, I don't know, I asked ChatGPT to write it for me, you know? Like, I responded saying, like, oh, I appreciate you being so open with your feelings. Unfortunately, I don't feel the same. I would very much like it, though, if things weren't awkward, still play games with us, still hang out with everyone. But yeah, I don't see you in that way. Everything was fine for a little bit. And then this person started being very, very jealous about me playing games with other people or not replying to the long essays they would write me. It wasn't like a long Discord message. Like, I'm talking, the character limits were so big that they were being sent in Word documents. That's how big of like messages we are talking. And if I wasn't replying to their messages straight away, or if I had something else going on in my personal life or work or streaming, I don't even need to give a reason for why. If I'm busy, I'm busy. I don't owe you an explanation for why that is. But when you're sending me essays and I'm not replying as quickly as you would like me to, you feel like I owe you that response. I don't owe you anything. Like, I've been a nice enough person to be like, I appreciate how you feel. I understand it, but I don't feel the same. I still want you to hang out with us all, though. So yeah, this person was becoming very bitter about me playing games with other guys, not really replying to their messages as quickly. So they kind of set out to try and ruin my life, or kind of try and get me to themselves, which was really weird.
And it wasn't just you, it was other people in your community as well, right?
Yeah, really weird behavior, honestly. Ended up messaging my little sister, found her Instagram somehow. My sister is not a part of the gaming community. She doesn't play games with us or anything like that. Was messaging her, saying to her like, oh, you don't want your sister hanging out with these kind of people, do you? And then was sending clips from members of my community, what they would kind of say during stream or playing games. And then messaging employers that I worked with, TOs. I don't know what nonsense they would kind of, he'd kind of like make up for them, but he would write some nonsense about me not being a welcoming community member because I wasn't replying to their messages as quickly as they wanted or giving them enough attention or something. But yeah, I kind of drew the line when they messaged my sister, because it's like, that's my family you're messing with there. You don't know them. She doesn't know you. She has no idea what's going on. Like, the last thing I would want is for you to put my sister in a position that you've just put me in, because I felt so uncomfortable. So yeah, I blocked, banned them from my community, but it didn't stop. Like, I think it's been like 2 years now, and this person has not given up, and it's so frustrating, because it's like, I've gone to the police about it, I have spoken to lawyers about it, I have messaged him under advisement from a lawyer saying everything you are sending me is being collected in evidence. And none of that matters to this person. At one point, they said something like, oh yeah, I know where you live because one of your friends from Discord told me. I freaked out when they said this, because I was like, nobody has any business telling this person where I live. But when I spoke to the person that supposedly said it, he was like, no, I just said like the area in London in which you live. Like, I never showed him where you live. I never told him your address or anything like that. So yeah, people are just weird, and if there is one thing I can say, it's do not be that person. Like, you can have these feelings, that's great, that's on you, but nobody owes you anything. And I feel like a horrible person saying it, but the reality is I don't owe you anything. Like, I want to be friends with everyone, I want to make new friends, I want to play games with people, but when you're making me feel like I have to make you the priority of my life when I have about a million and one other things to do, I'm sorry, but like, I'm not gonna let you make me feel like that. I don't think it's normal. I don't think it's right. And I think a lot of people need to be protected by people that are showing signs of this obsessive behavior and stuff. And for anybody listening to this, or like you, if you see any of that stuff happening, you have to be able to call people out on it, because if you don't, they just continue to put the blame on the person that has rejected their advances, because how could they, you know?
Yeah, it's tough, because we've spoken a lot about parasocial relationships and running communities and stuff on here with various other guests, and I think it is a growing problem online. And we were talking about it before we started the podcast, about when you as a person put stuff out on the internet through stories, tweets, whatever, someone else will take those in and feel like they're building rapport with you, when actually they're taking in all of your stuff and you're not taking any of theirs. And then there's that weird gray area where, for example, you and I, we both see each other's stories, so we're keeping up with each other through each other's social medias. And that's the sort of the normal, we chat every now and again, friendship where you take it in. And there's not a huge amount of difference between those, other than I'm assuming you're seeing what I'm putting out there and you're assuming I'm seeing what you're putting out there. And from their point of view, they just don't have that grasp of the relationship. And especially if they were a part of your community, you chatted to them like they were a part of the community at that point, and it's now they're on the other end of it where they've been blocked and everything.
Yeah, but they've made like alt accounts.
Yeah.
To read what I'm tweeting and still check up on me and stuff. And I think that's so weird. Like, if I don't, like, this is one thing that I wish that Twitch would kind of introduce. Just like hard, like IP ban people or something. I don't want people, if you've been blocked or banned, it's for a good reason. And I understand people could get around it with VPNs and stuff like that, but just make it as difficult as possible for people.
I think people should get the message that the challenge you've got is the obsessive nature of some people, especially online. And it's scary at times, because like you said, if they find out where you live, that's where stalkers and things like that. And as you mentioned, messaging some of your employers, has that ever affected you when you've been working at an event where they've messaged your employer or stopped you from getting an event even?
In regards to stop me getting an event, I don't think so. But then again, like, not every TO is going to come to you and say, by the way, this person's just messaged us. A lot of the time, thankfully, they have messaged me and kind of asked me, who is this person? And then I have to dredge up all of this information all over again for them. Has it affected me? I don't want to give this person the satisfaction of being like, oh, yeah, got her. Because I'm presuming that's exactly what they want, and I don't doubt that they're probably going to watch this as well. But yeah, there was a time where it kind of really got to me just before I got on camera. But then I was kind of like, okay, well, if I let this person stop me now, they're going to stop me from doing 100 other things, and they don't deserve that. They don't deserve my time of day. They don't deserve anything. I think if anything, they need to take a long, hard look in the mirror and just be like, maybe I am the problem, instead of trying to blame me or the next person or anyone else around them. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you talking about that. It's not the easiest thing to talk about. And I think that's part of the reason why so many people continue doing it, is because they feel like there's nothing that can stop them. But I think as more people grow aware of it, and unfortunately, it's pretty much every one of my female friends in the industry have told me about this being a problem for them. And it's just, it frustrates me every time I hear it, because it doesn't surprise me. And that's the annoying thing, is it should surprise me. But every single time it's brought up, I'm like, oh, of course, you're a woman in gaming. That's what happens. And that's a scary prospect for a lot of women out there, but hopefully it will change as time goes on. And there'll be ways to deal with it for people like yourself. But I appreciate you talking about it, as I'm sure it's just, you just want to forget about it if you could. But we'll close out the podcast with a little bit more of a nice question, which is the same question we ask everyone, and that's, what does gaming mean to you?
Okay.
It's a deep question.
It is a very deep question. I've got two ways to go about this answer. One of them is just one word: everything.
We've had that before. You're not the first everything person.
Oh, there we go. Oh, damn. Okay. Gaming to me is community, friendship, forgetting about life's problems, meeting new people, and having a damn good time. Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. Sports
Social Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.